Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. The debate over stem cells is growing again, multiplying and dividing, spreading across many areas of ethical and scientific complexity. Even as scientists and celebrities call for more research to see just what stem cells might do to treat ailments from Alzheimer's to Parkinson's, President Bush wants to hold the line on public funding for stem cell research. Now, you'll remember, back in August of 2001, he made what was billed then as one of the most important decisions of his presidency. The question was what to do about stem cells, those cells derived from human embryos that grow into many kinds of human tissue, and someday could be essential to the future of medical therapy. The president ruled 14 months ago that funding for research could continue only on certain stem cell lines already in existence, but not on new lines of cells. Now, at the same time, he appointed a Blue Ribbon Council on Bioethics to advise him on the nuances of the issue. Well, the council has recently spoken, but instead of endorsing Bush's proposal for a total ban, the council's calling for a 4-year moratorium. Let things stay as they are. Give the public the time to think it through. Okay, so here we are, a little over a year after Bush's initial decision. Connection listeners, do you feel it's now time for talk or action on stem cell research? And is the president getting good advice from his bioethics panel? Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. With me on the program today, David Prentice. He's a professor of life sciences at Indiana State University. He's a founding member of, quote, Do Not Harm, the Coalition of Americans for Research Ethics, unquote, which lobbies against the use of embryonic stem cells. And also with us is Dr. Janet Rowley. She's a member of the President's Council on Bioethics. She's also a professor in three different departments at the University of Chicago Medical School, Medicine, Molecular Genetics, and Cell Biology, and Human Genetics. Hey, that's four. How do you count three with that, Dr. Rowley? Anyway, Dr. Rowley, help us out with your perspective on what's going on with that council now, because you and four members of the President's Council on Bioethics just signed a letter in Science magazine saying you're not really happy with the way things are going.
Well, it's a very difficult issue, as identified by the fact that the council itself was split. And the issue really focuses on whether it is morally permissible to take eggs from women who have to donate those eggs and replace the nucleus of her egg with the nucleus from a donor who may be a person suffering from a disease or an injury and would like to have stem cells related genetically to that individual to use as for therapy. And so you're destroying a potential human being to benefit a living human being. And this is what causes many of the problems.
My understanding is that the split on the committee was pretty even, that seven people were for upholding the president's proposal for a full moratorium. Seven people said that more research should be allowed, and three people said, let's have this delay, and the delay ended up being the compromise solution. Is that right?
I'm sure that's what happened.
So
I wasn't involved in any of those negotiations, obviously, but that clearly is what happened.
I guess what I'm wondering is that your view that the president's getting a pretty accurate reflection of public opinion from a group that is so divided over this issue.
Well, that's very difficult to know because people who have strongly held views are often very vocal, and what the majority of the American people think on this issue, I think, is harder to assess. From my own standpoint as a scientist, the major difficulty is that for more than a decade, scientists in this country have been very limited in what they can do with stem cells derived from embryos. And as a consequence, the questions that we need to answer are still unanswered. And my concern is the moratorium just puts off answering those questions even a longer period of time. So I do think that we have to look on this as promise, but we don't know whether the promise will be fulfilled or not. And the only way one can really do this is with thoughtful, careful experiments.
Now, I do want to get to David Prentice, but just one more, Janet, before we go. As the scientist looking at the effects of the moratorium, are you concerned that young scientists are being forced to leave the country to do the type of research they want? Are you concerned that the research itself just isn't being done because the wisdom is here and the people are being prevented from exercising it?
I think it's a more insidious and pervasive problem than that. We don't have any idea how many people are leaving the country. Certainly some well-publicized examples, but the numbers aren't known. I think this whole area is under an ethical cloud such that a young scientist who may think this is really an exciting area and would like to spend at least a fair share of his career working in this area feels that it is imprudent for him or her to devote time and effort to this area because it is so politicized that the needed tools may well be banned and all work would have to be stopped. And in the bill, in one of the bills in Congress, makes it a criminal offense to be working on embryonic stem cells other than those derived from the stem cell lines that the president has accepted. So that that's the chilling effect of this on this whole area of science is what I think should be of greatest concern to Americans.
David Prentice, forgive me, I misnamed the group. It's Do No Harm, the Coalition of Americans for Research Ethics. You're also a scientist. Do you see the sort of chill that Janet is describing?
Well, I don't really see that. I do, as you mentioned, I'm a scientist. I do adult stem cell research. And I think we're melding a couple of different areas together when we start just talking about stem cells. What the President's Council recommended was a moratorium on cloning human embryos to then get the matched stem cells, potentially matched stem cells for the patient, as Dr. Rowley mentioned. On the other hand, what President Bush's decision a little over a year ago did was open up federal funding for human embryonic stem cell research. And there have been millions of dollars already pumped into this particular type of research in the U.S., certainly federal dollars as well as private funds. A couple other points in terms of this is that mouse embryonic stem cells have been available for over 20 years. And I think what we're seeing is there have been a lot of claims and promises made about first just embryonic stem cells in general, such as from the frozen embryos from IVF clinics. And now this desire to then clone human embryos to use those stem cells for research, when in point of fact, we really haven't seen much in terms of real evidence, published scientific evidence yet regarding these cells.
And, can we go back to the embryonic stem cells part that you're clarifying for us? Because that's in many ways at the heart of the debate here. And, and what you say, you know, is an opening up of funding, other people are saying is still a restriction where, you know, I mean, we read Nancy Reagan, reports of Nancy Reagan saying more needs to be done. The Juvenile Diabetes Patients Foundation says more needs to be done. How do you answer those claims?
Well, it's true that we've only had federal funding of human embryonic stem cells for a little over a year now, since President Bush had made his decision in August of 2001. Again, we've had monkey and mouse and other types of embryonic stem cells available for research for a long time. Now, I know there are, and I think in some ways valid, complaints about the accessibility to some of those stem cell lines that President Bush approved. On the other hand, it was interesting that the day before President Bush made his announcement, we were hearing claims that these cells could grow forever in culture and make any tissue. And the day after, all of a sudden, they had a 2-year shelf life and maybe could only make one or two things, so that now we needed many more stem cell lines. About 2 weeks ago, Dr. Elias Zerhouni, director of the NIH, was on Science Friday on NPR. And when he was asked this question, are we doing enough, do we need to do more, his response was, we really need to take a wait-and-see attitude. There are cells available. They're trying very hard to make more cell lines available. There is money available. We need to see what the published science can come out with. And at this point in time, the embryonic stem cells really have had a lackluster production in terms of results, especially compared to alternatives like adult stem cells from bone marrow and other tissues and from umbilical cord, which are already successfully treating patients.
Okay, so Nancy, jump back, or sorry, Janet, jump back in here, because in part what you're saying is that's the reason why there needs to be wider access to embryo stem cells, because not enough is known. Is that accurate?
Well, I think it is true that not enough is known, but I'd like to take issue with the usefulness of the embryonic stem cells. As David Prentice alluded to, there are many restrictions on the use of these lines developed by the companies that established them that limit what an investigator can often do. Moreover, speaking directly with people at NIH who are involved in studying these stem cell lines, it's not clear how many of them have a normal karyotype. It's not clear how many of them really are more or less immortal lines that can differentiate. And these are critical limitations on the use of these lines. Moreover, there was a paper published in Nature showing that some of the cell lines, because they're often grown on mouse fibroblast, so-called feeder layers, that in fact some of the cell lines are really fusions between mouse cells and human cells and clearly are totally inapplicable to any kind of research in patients. So, and you read in Science that very few investigators have actually sent in grant proposals to NIH for consideration. It's true they've funded a few, but even people at NIH are disappointed at the response of the scientific community.
David, we have to take
to their request.
We have to take a break shortly, but just a quick word from you on whether or not you're thinking that the president's getting good advice from his bioethics panel.
Well, I think he is, and that's reflected in the diversities of opinions that came out on this last question regarding cloning and the clarity that they used in terms of the language. As you already pointed out and Janet pointed out, there was a wide range of opinions, so this wasn't a set-up job. He pretty much got the whole range of opinions there, and now, unfortunately, he's got to sit down and decide what to do with that.
All right, Connection listeners, the whole range of opinion. What we want to do is pull the lens on the microscope back a little bit and talk about the mix of politics and lobbying and science and where it leads this country in its use of stem cells, and even just to make that reference is to set aside all the difference between the embryonic stem cells and the adult stem cells and those other ones that are being used by scientists. So a little bit of precision and a little bit of a long view when we come back at 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. This hour, we're talking about stem cell research. It's a little over a year since President Bush made his decision in the summer of 2001 when he said that, yes, stem cell research using embryonic stem cells could proceed, but only on existing lines. People on one side saw that as limiting. Other people saw that as liberating. It's a very complicated story because it, in fact, involves different types of cell research. What goes on in the United States may have no bearing at all in what goes on in other countries, and what goes on in California may have no bearing on what goes on in the rest of the United States, because the state of California has just said that they might open up state money to researchers who haven't had access or might not have access to money from the National Institutes of Health. With me on the program today, David Prentice is a professor of life sciences at Indiana State University. He would speak in favor of a total ban on cloning and embryonic stem cell research. He himself works with adult stem cells. Janet D. Rowley is also with us. She's a research scientist, a member of the President's Council on Bioethics, and a professor at the University of Chicago Medical School in Molecular Genetics and Cell Biology and Human Genetics. And George Annis joins the conversation. George is chair of the Department of Health Law at the Boston University School of Public Health, also has a law degree, a master's in public health, and a book called Some Choice, Law, Medicine, and the Market. So, George, you've had a chance to listen to the first part of our conversation. It's a complicated mix of science, but you can't keep the politics out of the conversation, can you?
Well, not when you talk about federal funding and abortion, which is obviously related to the embryo, unfortunately, I think, in this country. So, I mean, both Janet and David are right in everything they said. They disagree only on the question of whether we should ban or have a moratorium on cloned embryos. The president basically said, we are going to use some federal funding for some stem cell research. And that's never been done before. We haven't had any federal funding, even under President Clinton, for any embryo research at all. So that is a step forward. On the other hand, it's a very limited number of stem cells. Scientists are very frustrated at trying to get their hands on them, how good they are, what their pedigree is, et cetera. So people who want to do stem cell research with federal funding are still frustrated. People in the biotech industry obviously doesn't see this as a big moneymaker. There are only a couple of small biotech companies involved in this. So unless there's federal funding, we won't do a lot of research in this area.
Why don't they see it as a potential moneymaker? I mean, if, as some researchers claim, the cure for Alzheimer's and Parkinson's is buried somewhere in stem cell research.
It may be, but I think even the most optimistic researchers would say that's a long way off, and what we really need are some basic research to be done first, and historically, that hasn't been funded with private funding. That's been funded by NIH and federal funding.
Janet, just from you on whether or not it is, from your perspective, frustrating that politics will always be a part of this. I mean, sometimes it works on behalf of a scientist, sometimes it works against a scientist.
Well, I think that it is just a fact of life that those of us in science expect and learn to live with. In my own case, since I do research in leukemia, fortunately, everybody's all in favor of what I do. So I can avoid these problems most of the time in my own personal research experience. And I want to make several points. One is that this is a difficult area of discussion, and it is one in which we are woefully ignorant. I think there isn't any scientist who wouldn't agree that there should be a hierarchy of how you approach the problem and the tools that you use. And Catherine Verfey at the University of Minnesota, who's been at the forefront of using adult stem cells, certainly agrees that we need a broad approach to this. So I think that one should certainly exploit adult stem cells as much as one can, because then it gets you out of these ethical dilemmas. One can certainly see what the embryonic stem cell lines can do. How useful are they? Can you do the replacement of the nucleus of a cell in the stem cell line with a donor nucleus? Does it grow? Will it have immortality? The question, of course, of leftover embryos from in vitro fertilization. I don't have personal experience, but discussing with others, only about 20% of those really are viable, and even fewer of those are useful to develop into lines that could possibly be used down the road for therapy. But I still think these are avenues that one should explore first. And then when none of these are successful for the therapeutic target one has, then I believe it is morally justified to go to obtaining fresh oocytes and doing experiments with those oocytes. And I'm reassured that by my friend Michael Sandel in Boston that we live in an era of competing goods. And so destroying a human oocyte is not a trivial event. But if it could lead to potential therapy for a large number of individuals, then under those circumstances, it could be a justified process. So I don't think that scientists are saying the first thing we want are an oocyte that we will then experiment with. That's really the last thing.
And you're off to teach.
Yes.
Thanks for being with us, Janet.
Thank you.
Janet Rowley, research scientist, member of the President's Council on Bioethics. David Prentice, quickly from you on the pitfalls of the politics when science is involved. I mean, you know, you'll see on the front page Nancy Reagan speaking out on behalf of encouraging more research using, whatever stem cell research might work. And the woman has tremendous persuasive, tremendously persuasive position from which to speak. Now, does that mean that the science gets lost?
Well, there's a mix there. There's good and bad. And I'd like to pick up on one of Janet's phrases that we're woefully ignorant. We're very ignorant in terms of not just the science, but all of the other parts that go along with this, the embryonic versus the adult, and how effective one cell type might be versus another, and so on. There's a great, great deal of basic science that needs to be done. Now, what happens is not only are the scientists understaffed or undergunned in terms of the actual knowledge we have, so that we have to do basic science, but you know the general public and certainly the policymakers also tend to be fairly ignorant. And you know, one of the nice things, I think, about this debate is these types of programs, these types of forums where people are hearing some of the different facts, and we're trying to involve everybody in these types of discussions. I really see it as a professor as an educational endeavor in trying to educate the public, trying to educate the policymakers, because let's face it, most of those don't have much of a scientific background as well, and trying to really hold a fully informed, open debate. But there's no mistaking that, as Janet pointed out, for federal funds especially, you know, politics plays a role that we can't get away from.
And George, I'm not very smart about the details of where the research is right now, but one thing I do know is that this is a field where stuff happens pretty quickly, where a lot of people have focused their attention. So one question I have about the idea of a four-year moratorium is, does that, at least a four-year moratorium on any change from the status quo, does that mean that a lot's going to happen during a period when the United States politicians and scientists might want to change that, adapt to, you know, something that's discovered in Germany or something that's uncovered in England?
I mean, it's possible. It's very difficult to look 4 years in the future in science, obviously. But technically, the moratorium that the President's Bioethics Council called for was only on the creation of so-called cloned research embryos using the Dolly technique. It was not on using spare embryos, stem cell research in the private sector, or even federal funding for the Bush lines, the ones that he talked about. It's a very limited moratorium just on cloned embryos.
So it could happen that there would be more or less embryonic cell research within that four-year period, that the moratorium's not specifically covering that.
Yeah, absolutely. And in order for the moratorium to take effect in the private sector, it would require congressional action. And Congress, just this last year, was unable, at least in the U.S. Senate, was unable to agree on a ban on reproductive and research cloning. In other words, making a baby cloning, which everybody's against,
right.
and doing research on cloned embryos to make stem cells that might make matched tissues for you or me or anyone who's sick.
And my understanding, though Janet brought up the question of the law that's being proposed making it a crime to be involved in any kind of cloning, that's dead, isn't it?
That has no chance at all.
It passed correct. The House, and it's never going to come up in the Senate.
Well, that one didn't even pass the House.
Oh, okay.
The one to ban both cloned research on cloned embryos and reproductive cloning, making a baby cloning, that passed the House. In the Senate, it would have passed had it been restricted to making a baby cloning, but the Republicans wanted to ban both things. And the most interesting thing about the President's Bioethics Council, which I think most people thought would argue for a ban on both as well, mm-hmm. did not. It wanted to ban making a baby cloning, but said just a moratorium on the others while we put in regulations that can control it, while we figure out how to regulate the cloned embryos so no one will implant them in a woman to make a baby. And so we have some federal oversight that no one can do this research until it's been approved federally. That makes perfect sense to everybody. Even the people in the minority on that report said, yes, we need to regulate this area. We need federal regulation and oversight of this area.
Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. This is, as you can hear, an enormously complex issue in terms of the way it plays out, both politically and in the lab. But in your sense of what's happening on stem cell research in this country and the way the politicians are trying to work it through, do you get a sense that the country is going in the right direction, that the decisions being made are the ones that are appropriate, given what we know and what we don't know? 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, to join us. And to Jedburgh, South Carolina, Bill's on the line. Hi, Bill.
Howdy do.
Thanks for calling.
We have a friend here who has had a motorcycle accident. It's a quadriplegic. And so I went to the Internet to find out what could be done about it, discovered there's an Italian physician who in Brescia, University of Brescia Hospital, Brescia, Italy, who has done a successful sort of a jump wire connection. He pulled out this woman's sciatic nerve, connected above the injury to the spine and below, and used some sort of cellular fusion on each end, and she now is able to walk. Now, this is in a country that exiled Galileo, you know, a primarily Catholic country. Here we have fundamentalist Protestants who have put a stop to this thing. If there's any way we can get our friend over there where that procedure can be tried on him, perhaps he'll be able to walk again.
And so what you're saying is that this is not about science and politics, this is about religion.
In my opinion, it is. That religion is, in the presidential election of Bush, was heavily influenced, our politics were heavily influenced by the abortion issue directly from the pulpit.
Right.
And so the administration is beholden to particularly the Protestant denomination.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. David Prentice, let me turn to you. The way that Bill understands the situation in the United States, do you share his view?
Well, not really. And I think it's interesting to point out that as far as Italy's concerned, they have proposed a total ban on any human cloning, and they're against use of the embryos and the embryonic stem cell research. What Bill was referring to was using, you know, the patient's own tissues or adult stem cells. And it's not to say that that couldn't be done with embryonic stem cells. There's a researcher at Washington University in St. Louis who's working with mouse embryonic stem cells and spinal cord injury. There are a number of others doing the adult stem cell. And I think it's interesting, though, that very often we try to make this out as a battle between science and religion. And in my mind, it's not that. There are certainly ethical questions involved or moral questions. There are scientific questions. There are policy and economic questions and so on. But I think we oversimplify when we try and just look at one particular aspect of this and say, you know, this is what it's about. I have a good friend, Jim Kelly, who's been in a wheelchair as a paraplegic for the last 5 years with a spinal cord injury. And it's interesting, Jim, over a year ago, wrote to Bush encouraging him to support more embryonic stem cell research, But then when Jim started to actually look at the facts and what research had the most promise for him, as with the Italian experiment, he found it was the adult stem cells. And this past year, Jim testified against the use of embryonic stem cells. His reason was very plain and simple. He wants out of his wheelchair, and he says, if you take money away from the successful research, you're going to keep me in my wheelchair longer.
George, we do inform ourselves, you know, on the Internet, and we don't know necessarily how good it is or how reliable it is, but there is a desperate, desperate need out there among people, particularly those who think it might help their condition, to understand it. And what do you say when someone says to you, hey, I found this, but we could do that, but, you know, the religious right, they won't allow that?
Well, I think, as everyone has said, it's complicated. It's not just science and religion, but religion plays a major role here, because what we're talking about with embryonic research is the status of the human embryo. And there are religions that believe that you should be treated like a person from the moment of conception on. And the president and Tommy Thompson just this week announced they're going to go ahead with their regulations to define a child as beginning at the moment of conception on for the purposes of coverage under the CHIPS program. So, I mean, that's not a child. Very few people would think that's a child. If we thought it was a child, the embryo was a child, obviously we couldn't research on it at all. We certainly couldn't destroy it in research. So that's the critical issue. I mean, there's nothing like this in the history of politics in the United States, like embryo research. It's the only field which has essentially had a total ban on funding until very recently. So you can't separate the two. The second question is about the Internet. There's good things and bad things on the Internet, and really it's very difficult to judge. I certainly wouldn't use the Internet as my only source of medical information. I certainly wouldn't take a trip to Italy based on one website.
Interesting, though, when you try to evaluate or understand the degree of passion that people will bring to the conversation.
Well, and rightly so. People have horrible diseases, and they'd love to see them cured.
And their religious convictions can be equally as passionately presented. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, join our conversation about stem cell research, its current status in the country, whether or not you think that the president is following the sort of course that you would recommend. 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
My name's Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. Join us in our conversation about stem cell research a year and a bit after the president took the compromise stand that he announced in August of 2001. With me on the program today, David Prentice, professor of life sciences at Indiana State University and founder of Do No Harm, the Coalition of Americans for Research Ethics, lobbying against any form of cloning. George Annis is in the studio with me. He is chair of the Department of Health Law at the Boston University School of Public Health. Has a law degree and a master's in public health and teaches bioethics. 1-800-423-8255 to Hewelton, New York now, and Carl's on the line. Hi, Carl.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I think my biggest concern is, I'm a pastor and certainly hold, you know, many of the Christian attitudes and so forth, but I am concerned about stem cell, compromising stem cell research. I think it holds great promise for the future, and I think that if you let either politics or religion get in the way of real science, I think that, you know, it could be a serious setback for what we need to do to move forward and helping people.
So how would you make the decision between one of your folks saying, you know, Pastor, I don't think that we should do anything to touch embryos, and someone else saying, and I've got a sister with Parkinson's who might benefit from further research?
Well, I would say that, well, of course, I'm a pro-choice pastor, so I'm, you know, I guess my stance would be that I think we have to look at You know, the fact is that I'm going to encourage people in the sense that, you know, this, you know, that everybody in my congregation is going to have their own choice and their own way of looking at it. Of course, I'm not going to dictate or set edicts for people to believe one way or another.
Right.
I'm going to open it, but I'm also going to give them my point of view and perhaps even give both perspectives.
Do you see this debate as a reflection of or a proxy for the abortion debate?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly what it has become, and it's of course a political problem, not a science problem. And unfortunately, it's becoming a problem for science.
David Prentice, you were saying earlier that you're not so sure that is the case.
Well, no, I'm not, and I think there's some key distinctions to be made here. Granted, you tend to have many of the same characters on either side of this debate, as we've seen in the abortion debate. But let's face it, the law of the land is a woman will not be forced to gestate if, you know, she chooses not to. That's the basis of the Roe v. Wade decision. But it's been very interesting to see in these debates the diversity of opinion, you know, not just among religions, as has been mentioned before, where some would say, no, you shouldn't be doing this to embryos, and some would say, yes, there's a possibility of treatments. But especially even the cloning debate, where we've had pro-choice people saying, no, we shouldn't be doing the cloning to get these stem cells, and pro-life people that you'd traditionally put in those categories saying, yes, we should go ahead with it. I think what it shows is that it's not necessarily a proxy. I'm sure George may disagree with me on that, but what I see is we're really looking at some fundamental questions here and people having to wrestle with this whole question about the moral status of an embryo and so on, and what is the role of science in society. And again, I come back to, I like the fact that we're opening up this debate and trying to inform the public and the policymakers. And so it's not just the scientists trying to make these sorts of decisions.
But let me ask you to be a bit more precise personally. If you're in the pro-life camp, then your decision as a scientist about whether or not an embryo can be used in research is directly and specifically touched, informed by your belief of when life begins, right?
I'm sure if you are in the pro-life camp, that's the key question for any person that falls in that category, that the moral status of the embryo and that ethical question is the key question.
Do I put
but
you in that camp?
There are
that
others
camp
then who are
incorrectly
pro-choice who are making the same decisions, and I don't think you can make that assumption then for them.
Right.
Well, the pro-choice people I'm familiar with would not want to make a baby with cloning, but most of them are pretty comfortable doing embryonic work with cloned embryos, and under regulation, of course. And I think that's the key issue here.
You know, I also think that it's all about it's about sensible, understanding of everything. You know, I think that sometimes this debate becomes one way or the other, a black and white issue. I think it's simply not that. I think it's a, and I think that's where I stand as somebody who, a moderate in many of my thinkings, but somebody who's going to, want to look at the whole picture and not just say, well, this is the way it's going to be. This is what it says in the Bible or whatever. And, it doesn't allow for debate. It doesn't allow for an open-minded, sensible decision-making, in my view.
Right. I appreciate your call, Carl.
Oh, thank you.
1-800-423-8255 to Nashua, New Hampshire now, and John joins us. Hi, John.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
My name, I'm John, and I'm an associate pastor, a Catholic priest here in New Hampshire. I'm on my day off, and I was driving and listening to your radio and to the station, and interesting topic. And I have an opinion about it, of course, like most people. And my opinion is that the experimentation on human embryos resulting in the destruction for the benefit of other human beings, it may produce great benefits, for sure, great results. And people definitely would like to see this. But my thinking on this is it's sort of like a slippery slope. If we begin to experiment on human embryos, destroying them in order to obtain stem cells from them for other human beings, Where does that slippery slope end? Once we begin to, once we go down that road, doesn't that kind of open up the whole door?
Door to what?
The door to furthering experimentation on human beings, so to speak. For instance, like abortion. I'm not mm-hmm. making a direct link, but when the door opened up, eventually it became unrestricted abortion throughout the land, you know? And can't this lead to further, to a greater...
I hear you, John. Fair question. George?
Well, I think you do want to worry about slippery slopes, and you certainly do want to do line drawing, which is why I think we need heavy-duty regulation. What I worry about the most in making cloned embryos is that, as Ian Wilmot, the person who invented this nuclear transfer technique with Dolly the sheep, says, he didn't want to make identical sheep. He wanted to improve them. He wanted to use his technique to add genes to make better sheep. And someday we may want to use the cloning technique not just to make medicine, but to make better people. And absolutely I worry about that, and I think that that's something I would be in favor of outlawing as well.
John, I do hear in your voice, you know, a certain feeling of being conflicted, you know, in the way that I think a lot of us look at an issue like this. What would happen in your mind if this sort of research was outlawed in the United States, but it went ahead in Italy or Britain or someplace, and somebody came up with some, you know, wonderful discovery based on the sort of cell research that you think should not be taking place? What do you do then? Do you take advantage of that knowledge?
Well, I could think of, for instance, say somebody in England came up with a discovery, a cure for Parkinson's or a cure for some other disease that afflicts a great majority of human beings. That would be a wonderful result. But
and if,
you've got to,
go ahead.
But where is the result coming from? Where, you know, we have the human embryos are being destroyed. They're not, they're human embryos. Human embryos, and they're being destroyed. And once we, and if they produce great results, it's going to be even more tempting to probably, well, let's let the human embryos develop a little more, and maybe we can further get even better benefits if we let them develop, you know.
And my question is, what do you do with the scientific discovery?
Well, you'd have to, it would be opening up a, it would probably... It would be hard to put back. It would be hard to put back.
Yeah, David, go ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting because we talk about these hypotheticals, but there's another side that usually most of the public aren't hearing about, and that's these alternatives, the adult stem cells and so on. And most people aren't aware, probably, that there are already Parkinson's patients successfully treated with adult stem cells, heart attack patients, people's legs rescued from gangrene, beginnings of a lot of studies that show success there. And I think, you know, we try and look down the road at hypotheticals and what if and kind of put people in this moral dilemma, if you will, as to whether they might violate some of their principles mm-hmm. that they hold. When, you know, even if you look back at President Clinton's Bioethics Advisory Committee back in 99 said, you know, at this point in time, they recommended going ahead with the embryonic stem cell research at that point in time with the frozen embryos, but said if there was a less morally problematic alternative, that was not justifiable. And I think, as we've mentioned before, the science is moving very, very fast in this mm-hmm. field, but where most of the success is coming is in the alternatives. And I think people need to be more aware of those successful alternatives.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. George Annis, David's pretty persuasive when it comes to his case that adult stem cells don't really raise any of these ethical problems that bedevil the embryonic stem cell research. What's the argument for sticking with both streams of research there?
Well, again, adult stem cells don't raise any of this. Umbilical cord stem cells don't. So absolutely the research can continue and should continue and is continuing on those. The scientist argument, and I think the burden of proof is on the scientist to demonstrate this is true, is that there may be something unique about embryonic stem cells that make them better. To date, there's very little evidence to show that that's true. That's David's certainly right about that.
And we are a year past the same point that the president made his decision on that? Are we going to be 3, 4, 10 years before enough is known about this? I mean, maybe I'm wrong by saying the science is roaring along here.
Well, the science is not roaring along. I think you are wrong about that. Whether federal funding would jumpstart it that much is unclear as well. Why it needs federal funding, why the private sector won't fund it is another question. And Arlen Specter, as you know, the senator from Pennsylvania, has been very active in trying to get Congress to actually pass a statute opening up federal funding to all stem cell lines. And he will be successful if and when the public's convinced that that's what's necessary.
David Prentice, do you see this issue eventually being decided at the state level? We know that, if I'm not mistaken, South Dakota, Michigan, and Iowa have banned this research in those states. California, however, is offering state money to do embryonic stem cell research that's not being funded elsewhere. Is that how you see it shaking out?
Well, I don't know if eventually that's the way this will turn out. I think at some point in time we need some type of federal guidance, one way or the other, very clear. But in the absence of that, that is what we're seeing. Now, not so much on the embryonic stem cell research itself. There are a number of states, I think actually about a dozen, that would preclude this type of research. But as you mentioned, California recently passed a law to open up state funding. It doesn't really affect the federal funding question itself, which is what really most of the folks has been on. The hodgepodge, though, that you get with the various types of state statutes and laws and funding really doesn't help anyone in the end. And eventually we do need some sort of federal regulation or federal law or federal ban, whatever eventually comes out of this.
And George, the federal guidance that came on the abortion debate was through the Supreme Court. Is that where this is destined as well?
Well, probably not. I mean, there's no real constitutional right to do research or be a research subject. But I think more than even federal rules, which we do need, we really need international rules. And I actually think it was a disgrace for the United States last week to stop what had been a movement toward an international treaty at the UN to ban human cloning, to ban reproductive cloning, to make a baby cloning. And the United States said it wouldn't go along with that, even though every country in the world is in favor of that, unless we also banned what we're talking about today, doing research on cloned embryos to make stem cells. And I think that's an overreaction. I think we do need international rules, or any country can opt out and be the cloning haven. So it's time to have this discussion, not just at the national level, but the international level as well.
Well, thanks for your input. George Annis, Chair of the Department of Health Law at Boston University School of Public Health. David Prentice, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
David is Professor of Life Sciences at Indiana State University, a founding member of Do No Harm, the Coalition of Americans for Research Ethics. Earlier in the program, we talked with Dr. Janet Rowley, Professor of Medicine at the University of Chicago Medical School and a member of President Bush's Council on Bioethics. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.